If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
I've got a really inspiring guest for you on the podcast today. Joining us on the show from Manassas, Virginia is Forrest Odenhall. Forrest started his career as a cop, and in 2002, he started buying rental properties. Things were going really well for him. He was generating cash flow. He was building equity in his properties. And then in 2009, the market crashed. A lot of people lost a lot of properties when the market crashed. Forrest was able to make some really quick adjustments, and he didn't lose any properties. He didn't miss one mortgage payment, and he was able to continue building out his rental portfolio. Today, he's in a really good spot, so I want to talk to him about how he started, how he survived, and where he is today. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Forrest.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race, learn how you can create wealth, and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to NaradaRealEstate.com. That's NaradaRealEstate.com.
If you're a do-it-yourself landlord and you're looking for the ultimate online resource to help you better manage your rentals, check out Rentler. They have everything you could possibly need to help you better manage your rental properties, from taking online applications to tenant screenings and online payment processing. They have a special offer just for our listeners. After you order your first tenant screening, reach out to their customer service department and they'll give you a free month of credit card payment processing. For more information, go to tryrentler.com/credit. That's TryRentler.com/credit. Hey, Forrest, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start with you telling us how you first got interested in owning rental properties?
Well, Dan, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. And I got started. I actually I was in law enforcement, and I decided that I would also like to get into real estate. So I wound up doing both for a number of years, and I saw the advantages certainly at first of owning real estate and then being able to sell it for a profit. But it wasn't until I got hurt pretty badly in investing in stocks that I decided to own real estate long term as my financial future.
And how did that work? Did you end up just deciding one day you were going to sell off your stock portfolio and buy rental properties? Or how did that happen?
It kind of did. I had a friend that was a stockbroker. And my hat's off to people that understand that business and do well in it. And I know a lot of folks do, but it just wasn't for me. I got loaded up pretty heavy in technology stocks. And as a lot of folks know that were invested back in the late 90s, 2000 to 2002, there was a pretty big downturn in technology stocks. And when that bottom came out of that market, I had probably a net worth of maybe $525,000. I had invested whenever I had money, whether it be, you know, money that I made from real estate or earned, I would give it and put it into stocks. I thought that was going to be my financial future. And I wound up losing a couple hundred thousand dollars. So at that point in time, I realized that I was not going to be a very good stock investor. Mm-hmm. And I had already spent 12 years in real estate, and I had done a lot of business. But what I had to show for it was about, you know, maybe 60% of what I had only a year or so earlier. So I decided to invest in what I knew. That way, if I was to evaluate a property, if I was to invest in a property, I would only count on myself for that research. And I felt that that was a more responsible position to take, at least for myself.
Sure. Yeah, you have a lot more control with real estate, and I love that too. Now, where you live in, I guess where we both live, is in the Northern Virginia area, and it's a really expensive market. So when you decided you were going to buy rentals, was it hard to find a property where the numbers made sense?
Well, it's interesting because when you invest in, I'm a residential real estate person now. I do own a couple properties that wouldn't be considered residential. However, that was what my expertise was in. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a little bit of a challenge for two reasons. Number one, if you're looking for a decent return, a good cap rate, a lot of times, you know, maybe in residential real estate in Manassas, you're going to see a 5-6% cap rate. If you can get a 7 or 8, that's exceptional with a cap rate that's acceptable to you. So, in terms of a high cap rate, if I was to compare that to maybe an area from where my wife is from, Cincinnati, I have a friend there that is that bought a couple of residential properties. He has a 21% cap rate and a 14% cap rate. So in some of those areas where real estate's less expensive, the return is better in that respect, but he's not going to have the growth as far as the equity growth that I'm going to have. So it really depends, the four benefits in investing in real estate, it really depends on what the investor is looking for, but inside the Beltway is going to return, generally speaking, less than maybe outside of the Beltway. So the further out you get, you're probably going to get a larger return, but maybe potentially smaller growth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I never like to count on appreciation when I'm buying a rental, but the truth is real estate does appreciate. And the time from the time you started buying till now, the market has appreciated a lot. So have you seen a lot of appreciation in your rentals?
Yes, I have. At the time in 2002, when I decided I was going to invest in real estate, I did it with a long-term plan. So, and I was used to, you know, if I bought a property, a lot of times I would buy them with friends and stuff like that, and we would sell them and get a profit. But I came to realize that if my net worth wasn't substantially greater, and I was buying only to pay taxes and put the money right back in real estate, why not just stay in what I had? Mm-hmm. It's much better to do that. So the way I looked at real estate, whether I got the perfect deal or not, really didn't make a difference because I was going to buy that property, the one I bought in 2002. I currently own it now, 2018. I was going to buy it and hold it. And I knew that if I bought and held it, that over a long string of time, that I was going to have appreciation. It would be speculation to say how much I was going to have in 1 year or 2 year, but over a long string of time, on average, the market's going to appreciate in the United States about 5%. So even if I just applied that, I knew that I was going to be in a great position. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, every time my tenants made a payment, I'm paying principal and interest, so I'm getting principal reduction. As I reduce the principal, I'm getting richer yet.
Right, right. Now, the downside of a market that goes up is that it goes down sometimes. So in like 2009, 2010, we had a really bad market. So what was it like when that happened? Were you affected by the downturn in the market?
I was to the extent of income. So since I was in the real estate market, there's a lot of folks that counted on income from real estate. We took quite a bit of a hit. So it was more cash flow. So what I would do is I lived in a rather large home in Dominion Valley, and I decided to rent that home and then move into a one-bedroom, one-bath apartment. My wife was kind enough to move in with me. And we did that for 5 years and 2 weeks. That allowed us to make sure that we could sustain what we had, honor all of our payments. The problem I didn't have was finding tenants. Because with that pressure on the market and people actually being put out of their homes, if you focused on keeping your places rented, it just wasn't a struggle at all. We had very, very few vacancies because there were a whole lot of people that sought to get into properties. And even the property I had in Dominion Valley, which is 9,600 square foot, three finished levels, we've had that rented since October of 2008. And we have not missed one day of rental. So we were able to keep everything rented, keep that money coming in, even with a diminished cash flow as far as on the earnings side. We just had to keep everything in check as far as our personal spending.
You know, that must have been hard. I mean, walk me through what that decision was like. I mean, so you're living in this 9,600 square foot house, a very nice house in a nice neighborhood. And when you realize my income is dried up, like things aren't going well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. What was that decision like when you said, we've got to move out of this big house and go to a one bedroom apartment? Like how did that thought process and the conversation with your wife go?
Well, it reminds me of Sylvester Stallone. You know, the world ain't all full of sunshine and rainbows.
Right.
You know, isn't that really life? Going through the greatest recession since the Great Depression. So up to that point, we had only heard about, you know, really horrible times. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't consider it horrible in the sense that, you know, there were people that just didn't have anything to eat and that sort of thing. I think people really had to cut down. And I think it was a good wake-up call for a lot of folks. But clearly, I was doing well, and I was living in a very nice home. I mean, it had a weight room, a movie room, a sauna, a bar, we had karaoke, and that was just in the basement. I mean, it was we had a nice place.
Yeah.
So it was a bit humbling to have to deal with the situation. At the time, you know, I at the time my daughters were, you know, going through, they were still in high school and that. So, my daughters were out of high school, and through college. And so we were doing okay, as far as that's concerned. So I didn't have those concerns, but it was, you know, anytime you start to move up, And you get into a large home, you think, you know, I've got all my furniture paid for. All I have is really a house payment. You know, you feel like you've come to a certain level,
right?
And you're enjoying that. And then when you go down to a one bedroom, one bath apartment, you know, in hindsight, it was the best thing I could have done, because I think it set a great example for my kids,
right.
In that they could see that, you know, something. You have to be adaptable, and if you are, you can come out of these things okay, you know. But if you're not, a lot of folks, you know, were giving up their houses and that sort of thing because they couldn't see themselves
right.
Moving out of them. So I was glad that I did it. I'm happy because it gave me an opportunity to save a lot of money so I could actually do my first restaurant building. But it certainly well, one bedroom, one bath was certainly different than the house I had in Dominion Valley.
Sure, sure. So now that house is a house that I'm assuming that you probably wouldn't have bought that house as a rental, but it's working out really well because you've probably got a lot of depreciation on that house. And I guess you're also getting mortgage pay down. Is the amount that you're renting the house out for, does that cover the mortgage payment, or do you have to kick in a little bit extra?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, if I was looking for an investment property, this would not have been the property by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a negative. I think it's right at $400. So
okay.
Let's say the payment's at about $5,200, and we're collecting $4,800.
Okay.
Now, so that's the bad news.
Yeah.
The good news is, the principal is being reduced on that loan well over $2,000 per month. I have a tenant in there that has signed up through 2020. The depreciation, the government allows you to depreciate everything above the land between personal property, because I allowed it to be rented furnished, and the depreciation on the building. huge advantage. So if you take the totality of all of it, it works out to be with what would appear a cash on cash to be a bad investment, actually works out to be a pretty solid investment.
Right, right. Yeah, that's great. And then now the market's recovered. Has that property come back yet to what you paid for it?
Well, we there's been some really good sales, and of course, I'm gonna make a joke here. My Zestimate is pretty good, so
okay.
I'm happy about that. But yeah, I think we are in a position now that if we chose to sell it, that we could we'd be okay.
Okay, that's good. Now, tell me about the rest of your portfolio. So you said you own a restaurant building. What's that property like?
Well, Old Town Manassas is really coming a long way, and I know you're from the area, and you may get to Old Town once in a while, but they've really done some great things. It's the city government and the council and all that, and so I've decided I'm from the area, so I decided to invest in that area. So I own a few buildings. I own that restaurant building. It's 9406 Battle Street, and it's a public house. It's about 3,000 square foot, and they actually brew, make beer right there on site, and they have a restaurant and that, and it's a good little investment property for me. But I had to take that property with the exception of just like the skin of the building and some of the roof. The entire building is brand new. Every wire, every piece of plumbing, just completely 100% new. And it's pretty expensive to build a building inside of a building because of the structure was built in the late 1800s. The Architectural Review Board wanted the front of it to remain. But, of course, right there on Battle Street where all the energy is and the restaurant's location was ideal. So we completed that building, and we currently rent that, and that's an exceptional investment.
Okay. And then the rest of your properties, are they all single-family houses?
Well, I have another one on Battle Street that is above a restaurant called The Bone. So I own the building. The Bone rents from me. And then above that, it's a six-unit apartment building.
Okay.
So I like that one. That one's great. East Street. I have a six-unit apartment building on East Street. My kids went to VCU in Richmond. I own a couple condos in Richmond on an island called Brigantine, New Jersey. I have a property on the bay there. And then there's some a couple more townhouses in Manassas and a couple more single-family homes.
Do you manage the properties yourself?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
Is it a lot of work?
You know, it's I learned a long time ago that if you listen to someone's story and it sounds like a sad story, that you're probably going to be part of that story if you make an exception.
Right.
So
right.
Every time I did, I always thought, you know, when I heard that sad story, I'd say, well, I'm not going to do that to these folks. So we'll have a great relationship. Well, what I came to learn is this story seemed to be working out that I was the bad guy for expecting rent on time because I had
right.
a mortgage payment.
Right.
So I decided that people's credit is like blood work. You can look healthy and appear to be just the perfect specimen of health. But if we take your blood work, you know, the doctor may say you got about 3 days to live. Who knows? But that's the same way it is with credit. So what I learned was if you just let the system work, you run the credit and you just take exceptional people, that you never have to worry about having a great tenant. So in every time that we've made an exception, it's only been a few, we've always lived to regret it. So if you focus on getting an A tenant, and then you're going to have a quality tenant in place, and we're able to manage 23 rental units because that's the system that we use.
Right, right. And is it hard finding good quality tenants? I mean, it sounds like you've got your criteria figured out. Like, do your properties have to sit to find that perfect person, or are you finding a big pool of potential tenants?
Yeah, we have not had a concern. And it's interesting because we take it all the way back into the recession. We just have not had any problem finding good quality tenants. Now, you may be three or four applications in, but if you just remain patient, the likelihood of a property being vacant is pretty unlikely, because normally on the end of the leases, it gives you an opportunity to market and get the property rented, generally 60 days. Mm-hmm. And most rentals are renting well before then. So if you just don't jump on it early and you just take your time and, you know, find somebody a quality tenant, we rarely have any days of vacancy.
Right. Now, for that one property, you mentioned that you had a tenant that signed a 5-year lease. How did you work that out? How did you get the tenant to agree to stay for 5 years? Or was that what the tenant came to you with?
Yeah, that's, you know, you'll get people in different situations. So the tenant requested it. And in this case, they wanted their kids to go through the same school for that period of time.
That's great.
You get folks. We just signed a 3-year. We just came off of a 2-year lease. Folks were government folks. And we had some other government folks come in and it was a 3-year lease. They're going to be in the area for a certain period of time. They want to make sure that their housing is taken care of. They have a certain amount of allotment they can pay for their housing, and they want to secure it. They want to be set, have their family in place. They certainly don't want to move around. So generally speaking, if you just open it up, if I was to list a property and say that it was for rent and say that, you know, it's available for somebody to stay in for that period of time, then certainly there seems to be at least a thirst for it, with depending on, you know, the tenant situation.
Okay. Okay. Now, tell us what you're doing today. So today you manage a Long and Foster office, a local real estate office. So you're the managing broker of the office. That's kind of your main job today.
That is what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
I've been here in June. It'll be 4 years. I've been in leadership with Long and Foster. I sold for 20 years, and then I've been in leadership with them for 8 years. I'm at on King Street in Old Town Alexandria, and I run our historic office.
So are you selling real estate today, or are you mainly focused just on managing the agents in your office?
My wife, Christy, and my daughter, Danielle, they have an office in Manassas. They sell for Long and Foster, and they're attached to my office, but they are right there on Grand Avenue in Manassas. I'm the broker manager of this office. I do not sell. I don't list or work with buyers. That's part of the job.
Okay. But if someone is maybe looking to do some investing in the area, they want to connect with a good local agent. It sounds like your wife maybe could help them out. What's the best way for someone to reach out to you?
Well, they can reach out to Christy at her cell phone number, either the Odenhall Group or her cell is 703-489-5941. My cell is 703-216-9058. Also, we can invite people. I've done a number of real estate investment seminars where not only we discuss the advantages of real estate, we discuss the advantages of owning real estate in what's called a self-directed IRA, your IRA account. But we also show folks at the seminar how to break down a property. So when you evaluate a property that you want to buy, the best time to evaluate it is before you buy it rather than after you buy it. So you would want to you want to evaluate it. And we would be able to have folks do that, and they would be able to tell when they left the class, they would know how to talk about cap rate, cash on cash, cash flow before taxes. They would understand every one of the categories so they could make an informed decision when they're buying.
Forrest is going to be putting on a couple of these training classes over the next few months all over Northern Virginia. If you want to get some more information about where they're going to be, the times, whatever else, just reach out to Forrest. He can fill you in. I'll put his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode159. If this is your first time listening, we have new interviews every single Tuesday. Just make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast app, and you'll get the interviews delivered to you automatically every single week. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.